Ladies and gentlemen, you have no idea how I'm delighted to speak to this man. I wrote about him in my column a few weeks ago, and I described this man as got the same talent and is going in the same direction as Bob Monkhouse, which means we love him forever. He can do everything from singing to acting to hosting. It's Bradley Walsh, hello.
Oh, what a lovely thing to say, Pete.
But I mean it, really. You know how much I loved Bob, you know, and he loved you as well. And I mean it. I think you're a joy. I think you're a joy as an entertainer.
Thanks, mate. That's really lovely of you. I really appreciate it, Pete. How are you doing, mate? Anyway, you all right?
Yeah, I'm making a living, and I've got my phone in still and doing panto as you. All the usual things. Still plodding on at my age.
Good for you, mate, yes.
Bradley, looking back, where do you think it's changed for you? Because you really are. You're never off the telly. You're doing sensational, but you deliver the goods every time. Why do you think it is?
It's the same as everyone if from a certain era, Pete, I believe, that you know, working in the clubs, you've always got something in your locker you've had to use in the past. And sometimes it comes along and the planets are in alignment and you get the chance to use it. And consequently, we, and I mean we, you included, of course, that sort of entertainers, given that tag, are a bit of a dying breed. And I think that, unfortunately, the way the world now is and the way television is going with reality, et cetera, that I think that, you know, people are starved of entertainers. And I think it's nice to see entertainers. I love going to watch entertainers now. I really do. And I love to be entertained. And I think if you've got something to offer, people go, oh, that's right. I didn't realize you could do that. Well, you know, that's just the way it is. That's part of our makeup. You do the same, Pete, you know. And Bob was another one, as you're talking about. You know, one of the greatest entertainers. Steve Wright said something to me the other day. He said, you know, you remind me a bit of Brad, the way Dickie Henderson had his career. And people obviously of only of a certain age would remember Dickie Henderson.
There's a man and a half as well, my word.
So you know, we're few and far between because it's probably only, I might be one of the only ones left doing it on television. But there are loads of us, as you well know, Pete, in and around the clubs and still working that have it and that have that sort of those things in your locker. And I think to keep them going and to keep them bubbling under is great. That's why I think I'm sort of one of the people that have stayed where they are, I guess. I'm not quite sure, but they are.
Bradley, I get very sad, as you mentioned it, I get very sad at reality TV these days because there is so much talent out there. And thank goodness you put the Palladium on, which I thought was fabulous. You used Joe Pasquale and it was entertainment. Old-fashioned, good laughs, beautiful singing, talent, just entertainment.
Yeah, and do you know what, Pete? The beautiful thing about getting the Palladium show was that you do get a chance to have people on it who know that arena so well and are so comfortable in it and never going to be fazed. And to have someone like Squeaky on the show and, you know, and Pete Andre doing his return bit, it just becomes a bit like a gang show then. And that's I still, and you know, funny you the phrase you use, you know, it's good old-fashioned entertainment. Strangely enough, it's entertainment, full stop.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I, that's a phrase you and I would use, old-fashioned entertainment, because that's what we grew up with. Mm-hmm. But it's just pure entertainment, which of course you don't get. I mean, I'm trying to catch up some programs to watch here, and I've been watching sort of X Factor, and I've been watching some celebrity jungle stings and all that sort of business, trying to catch up. I've been working. And, you know, they're good shows and they're popular shows. And X Factor specifically is an entertainment show in its respect, whereby the talent is going to come forward as is Britain's Got Talent. But things like The Jungle, you know, had it not been for the fact that the celebrities open up and you see them squirm, I'm not sure that would be entertaining. You know, but I don't know. I mean, the other things, I'm a bit with you, Big Brother and all that stuff. Not for me at all. Don't get it.
I know what you mean. I'm talking to Bradley Walsh, ladies and gentlemen. I've got to tell you, Bradley, I love you as an actor.
Oh, bless you. Thanks.
Cracking actor. I think you put a grit into your part and you're, how can I describe it? You're unexpected. I don't know what you're going to do or what you're going to say. And I love that in an actor. I love you as an actor. I really do like you as an actor.
Thanks. Strangely enough, that's basically sort of how I started. Strangely enough, I started at school doing in all the school plays, and I really enjoyed that. And then tried my hand as an actor very, very early on, doing parts and bit parts, and just couldn't get any work. And because I was good at doing voices, I then became an impressionist. Then the impressions dropped, the impression just became a stand-up comic. Having seen someone do stories, and the person I saw do stories, I thought, he's just a comic telling jokes. And I went to watch him work, and he was telling stories, and it was the great Tom O'Connor. And so I said, oh, that's the way to go. And Tom O'Connor really was the original, in one of the original, in my eyes, of the sort of what you would deem, we would deem in the older days, as the alternative comic, where he didn't actually tell jokes, but would tell stories, you know, which was born out of his time in Liverpool.
It's interesting you say that, because I've always said over the years that when somebody dies or somebody goes out of place, somebody fits into that slot. And I believe that Tom O'Connor fitted into Al Reed's.
Yeah, Al Reed, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Yeah, that's very true in actual fact. Yeah, Al Reed. And I used to love watching Al. And I love Tom O'Connor. And I never really got into Al Reed as much, having seen him only a couple of times. But strange enough, and then my favourite comic, one of my favourite comics of all time, was from Scotland, Chick Murray.
Oh, you are messing. We've got exactly the same taste. When he looked down at hair, it was just the look. Nothing else. No gags. The look was it, wasn't it?
I know. He really just used to make me laugh. He really, really made me laugh. You know, that sort of really lugubrious. It's very, very funny. Very funny.
So where has the album come from? I've got it in front of me. Bradley Walsh, Chasing Dreams. I was shocked.
Well, look, you mentioned the London Palladium show tonight, the London Palladium. And what happened was we were looking for different openings of the show. So one was like, for instance, the first one was the clapping thing from Will Rogers Follies that Michael Barrymore did on the telly, and we sort of paid homage to that. We were trying to pay homage to all sorts of genres and things. That's what we were trying to do. And we were short one week. We didn't know what to open with. And one of the producers said, you know what we should have a big band opening. That's what we should have, a big band swing opening with all the girls, do the whole bit, the dances and stuff like that. And they said, who can we get to do it? And Steve Sidwell in the band, who was a great musician and arranger, and he's worked with Bublé, Robbie Williams, all that, and did all the music with Craig Armstrong for Baz Luhrmann's Moulin Rouge. Well, he was the musical director at the Palladium All-Stars. And he said, get Brad to do it. And the producers said, no, that's very good. So get a singer. If we get a singer in, who can we get? And Steve said, no, get Brad to do it. Brad sings. You ask Brad. And they said, well, let's hear it. I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll do Almost Like Being in Love. I've got an arrangement that's 1:45. All right, let's do it. Anyway, I'd done it. The producers went, crikey, we didn't realise you could sing. I said, but, you know, I don't really let anyone know. I sort of take my jazz band out now and again, and we just do standards and stuff. And they said, no, we love it. Oh, right, that's in. So we do it. And the night it was on, Sony Music were in the theatre at the Palladium. And they brought a couple of acts along, come up to me afterwards, said, we didn't know you could sing. I said, oh, yeah, same old story. You know, I don't really, it's not really a thing I do. I let people know about it. 2 days later, they rang up, can we have a meeting to release an album? Want to do an album with you? Here's a track list. And I said, well, I can't sing those songs, really. I don't really like them. They said, which ones do you like? You'd have to have some greatest hits on it. And I said, well, I can do That's Life because my wife makes me sing that when we're out at karaoke. I could do Bojangles, I suppose. And they said, can you do Stepping Out? I said, yeah. I said, well, I'll tell you what, you do those three. We'll let you choose your other tunes. And they gave me a 3-album deal. And myself and my old musical director, Barry Robinson, and Stevie Sidwell, we sat down and then we chose the tunes we wanted to hear in big band and string arrangement. So that's why Fly Me to the Moon is at that speed. It's the definitive Bart Howard version that Bennett does. Then you've got What Kind of Fool Am I? Sammy Davis is one of the greatest songs. And of course, then you've got things like How Do You Keep the Music Playing from the album L.A. Is My Lady, Quincy Jones and Sinatra. And things like that. And Amapola's on there as well, which means Little Poppy. And Amapolo is my mum's favourite song. That's why it's on there. My grandfather, who's Scottish, Barney, he used to sing it to my mum when she was a little girl, dancing around on her feet, on his feet, you know, like you do, dads do with their kids. And that's why that's on there. So everything has a meaning. And Smile's on there as well, because Charlie Chaplin wrote it, the greatest clown that ever lived. And then that was then played at my dad's funeral and one of my wife's auntie's funeral, she adored. So there's a meaning behind every song, Pete, you know.
Bradley, have you surprised people with this?
Oh, actually, yeah, I have. I've had texts since it got released. I've had texts and emails flying in from people abroad as well, saying, "Well, oh my God, we can't believe it! I've just downloaded, thinking, well, I'll ever listen to this and see what the heck he's doing, and couldn't believe it. And just we can't believe it. It's amazing." And it took about 10 days to record the album, about fortnight to record the album, and. But I've got to be honest with you, Pete, it's all very well me being on stage in front of my own audience to say my jazz band. So if I've got like a four-piece jazz band, and I go out and do my little standards and then tell showbiz stories and have a 20-minute break and then do an hour of complete stand-up, well, that's fine. But when you're with 54 musicians who are at the top of their game and they're leaving the studio to then go and work with Michael Bublé in Manchester for the BBC, then all of a sudden the pressure's on. And bless them, though, they were lovely. And I was really, you know, I was really worried and really scared about it. But they were so supportive. Mm. You know, they said, it's just, Brad, come on, you can do it. And there you are. I mean, that's the proof now in the pudding. So it's a really nice, there's some lovely tunes in it, Pete.
But Bradley, what a turn on. You must lie in bed and go, yes! How many musicians? Yes!
Yeah, I know. We were so lucky. We were so lucky with the calibre of musos as well. I mean, because they've all played on a lot of them have played on all the Bond tracks, the big bog Bond tracks, and then loads of stuff. Yeah. There's all those noise. I've got stuff going on my phone. I'm sorry, Pete.
Don't worry about this. I've got to ask you, of course, we know The Chase, and the album's called Chasing Dreams. Was there anything in that?
Well, actually, Steve Sidwell wrote the tune. And he rang me from Mexico just about a week before we went into the studio. And he said, Brad, look, I've written this tune. I was around the pool. I had this tune in my head. He said, and I've written it down. He said, I'm going to arrange it and bring it in. We'll put it as what's called a phantom track on the album. I said, okay. He said, well, it'll have no lyrics. Can you write some lyrics? He said, for some reason in my head, because of The Chase, I've got you chasing dreams, you say, you never give up. And I went, oh, okay, yeah, I've got it. So literally, we started work on the Monday with the band, recording. We were, you know, singing with the orchestra and the band and everything. And in between the stops to have cups of tea, I was writing the lyrics for it. And within, I don't know, maybe a day and a half of about 2 hours, 2.5 hours solid, I reckon, we put the words to it down. And I wrote the words. And I meant it truly as a message, really. As an uplifting message to anyone, you know, just don't give up, keep going, because if you work hard enough, you'll sort of realise your dreams, whether it's just to have a happy family life or to reach your major goals, and that's what it is. And it's not just that, though, it's a great tune, it's quite catchy, it's a bit like, Steve wanted it to be a bit like Bring Me Sunshine, like Eric and Ernie Bring Me Sunshine, so it's got that type of feel, so it's lovely.
Bradley, do you ever get fed up with The Chase? I know you do a great job and you've been doing it a long time.
Well, we've made probably about 1,100 shows now.
See, that's where Bob Monkhouse comes in. He'd say that. We've made about 1,100 shows.
and we've just signed a contract for another nigh on 400 for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. And right at this precise moment in time, strangely, this week alone, it has started reaching a peak never seen before in daytime. So I get the figures through for it all the time, and every morning the figures are reported to me. And we're now getting somewhere in the region just on 4 million. So it's about 3.8, 3.9 million, and something like a 26% share, which has never been seen in that sort of slot, that 5 o'clock slot. So it's very important to ITV, for them. So that's why they keep wanting more of the shows. But I've got to say, I love every second of it, Pete. I have a ball. The minute I go in, we start recording at 10 o'clock. We finish the first show at 12. We have a 20-minute break. We start again at 20 past 12, finish at 20 past 2, have lunch at 20 past 2, a late lunch, and then start working around about 3:30. Then we're finished at 5:30, stroke 6 o'clock. We'll make 3 a day, no audience, and just rattle through them. But it's exhausting because at 10 o'clock in the morning, or say 6 o'clock in the evening, you have to be as bubbly and as fiery as you were at 10 o'clock. So all the shows that have an even keel, you know. But it's exhausting. And we do 4 days a week, 12 shows a week. And then we have a run of 3 weeks, 2 weeks off, 3 weeks, 2 weeks off.
You've got a good team around you.
Oh, they're great, Pete. You'd love them, mate. You'd really love them. And what's beautiful about our team is, as well, we get a lot of youngsters coming in. A lot of youngsters are blooded on our show.
Great.
And because we work as like it's a bit like a juggernaut now, they can come in and they can learn quickly from real proper production professionals. And so then those young kids stay within ITV and they go on to work on other shows. And we've had a lot of shows, you know, a lot of people, youngsters that have spread their wings on our show, sort of learnt quickly and then stayed with us for a year and are on now the X Factor. They're on Britain's Got Talent and in Australia now. I mean, some names come up on the credits. I'm thrilled for them. They always come back to us and they always say, oh, thanks for my chance. We really appreciate it. Because one day, Pete, they'll be running ITV or the BBC.
Yep.
And, you know, it's all about paying it forward. It really is.
It's like radio. Radio is very young now. My boss is half my age, at least. It's incredible.
Oh, you're 18.
Bradley, you're a workaholic and you love it and you admit it completely. No panto this year.
No, I'm actually seriously, Pete, having a break. I did that. I did a panto in the year before last in Birmingham. And the world's biggest panto, a company we started called Arena Pantos to try and bring something different, and which was okay. I worked on that with O'Grady, and I produced that show. But this year, last year and this year, no Christmas show because I promised my wife I would have time off.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's sad in one respect because we have no top of the bills anymore for panto. Hence, they have to go to America and find some unusual ones and some of these... reality stars.
I know.
That saddens me. I mean, there's a huge panto this year at the Palladium. What a top of the bill.
Yeah,
with O'Grady and Amanda and Julian. I hate to think what the wage bill is.
Yeah, I know. But having said that, I think somewhere along... Now, this is the thing, CP. Now, they've sold a lot of tickets. The advance for that show was really, really good.
Yeah.
Very, very high. I was at the Palladium on Wednesday, talking a bit of business with the Palladium themselves. And interestingly enough, whilst you would say, yes, that wage bill is going to be astronomical, the average ticket price is around about £75.
Yeah.
And that, don't forget, that theatre holds 2,200 people, two shows a day. So you're 4,500 people at £75. I mean, just do the math. It's going to take a lot of money for 5 weeks. The advance is extraordinary, and they're well up. So they'll be selling out.
Yeah.
So everyone will get paid, you know.
It'll be amazing. Tell me, before we won't keep you much longer, acting, what's happening? Anything in the pipeline?
Not at the moment. The trouble is, see, if you do something like Law and Order, when we used to do Law and Order, we used to finish, start at around about first week of September. I'd have my summer off. I'd finish the chase and everything in sort of early July, sort of 7th of July. And then I'd have the whole of the summer off to get myself together. Then we'd start in September, second week of September, and that would take you around virtually to the beginning of April. And then you'd have to start your light entertainment stuff again. And it was, be honest with you, Pete, it was relentless, absolutely relentless. So you've got to devote 6 months, virtually, to a drama. And whilst I love my drama, and it's my first love, I might well do a play, strangely enough. I've been asked to do a play in the West End next year, which I might do a short run, a five-week run play, which will be good. Television drama at the moment. I should have just been recently done the new Broadchurch, but I couldn't because I was filming for The Chase. That's the problem, you see. When you're sort of contracted to do those types of shows, they obviously have to take the precedent, and your wants, unfortunately, come secondary. So.
I've got to ask you, because there is a serious side to you, and I certainly don't want to bring this interview down, but I've got to ask you, you were a professional footballer. You must be shocked at what's going on right now.
Well, it's interesting. I've got to be honest with you, Pete, it had to happen sooner or later. It had to happen sooner or later because it must be in every sport, and it's dreadful. But the players are so brave, and you just wish that this had happened a long while ago, you know, in respect that of them coming and talking about it, you know, sooner. I don't mean a long while ago, I mean sooner, because, you know, it could help other players.
Bradley Walsh, you've got a new album out. It's called Chasing Dreams. We've got Almost Like Being in Love. We've got That's Life. We've got Fly Me to the Moon. We've got one of my favourite songs of all time, What Kind of Fool, Night and Day, Smile. You've got some lovely tracks. Do me a favour, just keep doing what you're doing, because you're keeping proper entertainment alive.
Oh, bless you, Pete. Thanks, mate. Thank you so much. Do you know what? It's lovely talking to you. It really is. Give everyone my love up there in the Northwest, won't you, Pete? I mean, really, just love it, mate, honestly. I haven't been to your neck of the woods in such a long while. I was talking to a girl the other day who came on the show. She was on the Chase the other day. And I said, oh, hello, love, and where are you from? And she said, oh, you won't know where I'm from. She said, I said, oh, you sound sort of a bit Liverpoolish. And she went, no, she said, I'm actually not from Liverpool. She said, I'm just from a little place called Frodsham. And I said, oh, yeah, Frodsham. I said, oh, I've died on my arse there at the Merseyview restaurant a couple of times. and she laughed at me.
I tell you, who always speaks incredibly fond of you, Mick Miller.
Oh, Mick, he's great, isn't he? Isn't he the funniest man?
One of the funniest. Isn't One of the funniest. Man? Yeah, it really annoys me, he's that funny.
Oh, he's great. What is it? Now, here's something I want to ask you before we go. What is it about your particular area, the Liverpools of this area, the north sort of west, that is so synonymous with some of the world's greatest ever comedians? What is that? What happens there? Do you know what I mean?
I think there's a warmth here.
Yeah.
And I do on a Sunday afternoon, I do 3 hours at the Grapes, a pub. I sing for 3 hours solid without a break. And you get heckled, you get laughed at. So nobody's frightened to have a go back at you. I think that warmth, I think the fact that you can't walk anywhere without people wanting to talk to you, and everybody wants to tell you a gag. So that, they have this magical thing that just, people just relate to each other, and I think that's it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And when we look in television numbers, just getting back to television, you know that whole area, that northwest, is our indicator. Did you know that?
Yep.
That's actually our indicator. So we look at that and how are the shows doing, and the northwest becomes our indicator from sort of around about, I reckon, from Runcorn right up to the other side of Blackers, probably into sort of Carnforth way.
Yeah.
You know, that whole area is all the way in, right across the coast. I'll tell you where I was the other day. I haven't been in a while during the summer. I went to watch Mr. World at Southport.
Oh, you were up this way.
It was great.
Yeah.
Southport. I loved. Do you know what? I've been to Southport a couple of times before, and I never realised you could stand on the pier and see Blackpool Tower.
Yeah. It's way out there.
I know. I've never known that. And yet I've been to Southport a couple of times before and never knew that. I was thrilled. I said to my wife, you can see Blackpool Tower from here. Look, she went, no, I know. I know that. It's always been there. I went, I know, but I didn't realise you could see it. Yeah. She said, well, no, it's been there. That's where it is. I said, no, I know. And then we sort of to-ing and fro-ing like a couple of holes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I did a gig at the end of that pier, and the train wasn't working, and I was knackered. I think it was 12 people made it through the rain down there. It was just but I tell you what I've learned tonight, and I'm so thrilled. I knew I had something in common with you. I'm over the moon, and I didn't know. I've died on my backside at the Merseyview. Bradley Walsh, thank you for joining me.
Lots of love, Pete.